Welcome to the Urban Farming Podcast. My name is Chris Late. I've been urban farming for about 2 years now, and we really here to get the notion of urban farming as a potential solution to food security on track. So please hit the subscribe button, like us on Facebook, and to send us what you would like to know and understand better about urban farming. This is Chris Late. I'm a podcast for urban farming in South Africa. Very honored to have a very special guest with me. It's the young Rikkelies Reyneke. Rikkelies started with aquaponics. She actually started her first fish farm when she was 12 years old. And she's gone on to extraordinary heights. Rikkelies, you're in matric next year in Macy's Weir in Pretoria.
Yeah.
That's it. And how was your year?
Well, definitely it was a busy year. It felt as if I was just running through the year, and at the end of the race I was like, wow, did I just made it?
Oh, wow.
So it was a busy year, but it was also a good year.
Oh, great stuff. Nah. Well, we're actually next week going to talk a little bit more, but I mean, it was a year that also had some international shows, and you did very well in the science fairs and so on. I'm not going to elaborate too much on that, but I can just think running a fish farm and businesses and being at school and being on the matric board and everything. Good luck for next year. I'm sure you're going to make a good success of it. Rikkelies, we, as you know, the podcast here focuses on urban farming specifically. The aim is really to get more people aware about the value of using unused urban spaces for agricultural purposes. And as you know, there's quite a lot of methods. There's hydroponics, there's aquaponics, there's aeroponics, there's a number of methods that you can grow things, whether it is, you know, balcony farming or pot farming or utilizing your lawn for a market garden. But today we want to speak a little bit about aquaponics specifically. Would you mind just maybe introducing your passion? Where did it come from? How did it start? How did the interest in aquaponics start?
Well, if I can go back as far as 5 years ago, with a small girl's dream of 12 years, I had this passion to save marine life. And that started after I watched the movie Dolphin Tale. And soon I realized that I need to make a difference in fish production or the fish life and etc. And so slowly but very suddenly a fish farm occurred, and with that there occurred some problems, like our water quality was too bad and we had to get a solution, and one of the solutions was, for example, aquaponics. So everything happened accordingly. The plan was never to jump in to do aquaponics. I didn't even know what that was at the age of 12, but gradually the whole business developed with all the different aspects. So that's how aquaponics came into the picture. Yes, today it's a booming business. We have four different companies registered, from aquaponics right through to a shop, even to modular aquaponics systems, as well as catfish, hatchery and so. So it's quite diverse, but I think that's the best thing of aquaponics. It's not just a certain way that you need to go. There's so many different aspects that can be connected. For instance, you can have a nursery to create seedlings, you can sell your vegetables, even with that you can have an earthworm farm to put the earthworms back in your grow bed. So there's so many different aspects, and if you put them all together, it's a quite a thriving business.
Oh, wonderful. And I mean, there's even a training aspect, and it's a spectacular place. I must say, I've been fortunate to visit La Pièze at a number of occasions, and I was still very much at the early stage of aquaponics, and I was very impressed with you know, your health protocols, you know, washing your hands before you enter certain areas, and the fact that your hatchery is off-grid. So the energy efficiencies and so on that you've built on your farm is wonderful. And I must just congratulate you on
that.
Rika Lees, all right, so for people that don't know what aquaponics is, let's just, you know, define it as simple as possible. Well, how would you describe aquaponics?
I would describe it as a combination of fish and plants in one system, where the water is constantly recirculating between the different aspects, fish and plants. But basically, the plants can't survive without the fish, and the fish can't survive without the plants. For instance, the fish makes the water dirty. That is like fertilizer for the plants. The plants clean the water, and the clean water goes back to the fish. So I can go into more detail with all the bacteria that needs to be involved and so, but in the most simplest words, it's fish, plants, and water constantly recirculating.
Okay. Oh, well, that's a good definition. I think in other words, what if we look at freshwater fish specifically, is nature is designed in such a way that their waste flows away to the sea. But when you put them in a confined space, that cannot happen. So they'll pollute their own environment if you just leave it there. And the wonderful component, but maybe just out of interest, how does the plants optimize the fish waste? What maybe explain a little bit in terms of the microbiology there.
So that is where aquaponics can come in. You can either just focus on pure aquaculture, which is the pure filter systems. Now, if I can describe it, you need different stages. You need a mechanical filter system to filter out the physical solids, because a plant doesn't have a mouth, so it can't just eat a whole solid. The solid is being taken out of the water, but still there's ammonia and stuff that's built up in the water. So from that it goes to a biological filter, where there's bacteria growing in the biological filter. There's even bacteria also growing in the mechanical filter, but the biological filter is the main focus of excessive amount of bacteria. And in that filter, a lot of surface area is created to get even more surface area with more bacteria. And that bacteria helps to break down the toxins in the water to a phase where the plants can absorb it. So the plants will not physically absorb the solids, but rather the things that's been,
Well, if I can help there, I mean, in essence, then there's a couple of important aspects. Let's just take the ammoniac. The bacterial components, whether it's in your biological filter or in an aggregate stone-based growing bed.
Yeah, that's where the aquaponics would come in.
Yes. But that bacteria then breaks up the nitrates. And that's the
component that's actually been produced for the plants.
For the plants.
So aquaponics can also be used in a different way. You don't necessarily have a mechanical filter and a biological filter in separate filters, but it's rather combined in one.
Okay.
So for instance, the aggregate, the rocks create surface area for good bacteria to grow, but I believe in the rocks the solids get entangled somewhere in the rocks or in the plant roots. Now, I know that there's a belief that if there's more solids, it's not clean, they can suffocate the plants. But it's keeping the fish happy, so that's all that matters. The fish needs to be happy. So there's a lot of different ways to tackle this problem. I know in some cases people first put a mechanical filter and then the aquaponic system, which is totally fine just to get that solid component out of the water. But if you're very high production driven, then I would advise that. But if not, it's all right to have some solids in your aggregate or in another system, another aquaponics technique or so. So that is basically the filtration process of how the solids need to be first broken down into a phase where the plants can absorb the broken down fertilizer, if I can call it that. It's not really fertilizer, but yeah.
Well, I mean, and it's actually magical that you, I mean, plants need fertilizer. You know, that unfortunately, if I don't put something back into the ground where where my carrots grew, you know, it's the microbes is going to take a long time to rebuild a system. You know, you need to introduce, to be a sustainable farmer, you need to introduce fertilizer. And it's in the most farming setups, it's one of your highest cost drivers. But yeah, you actually make a profit out of your fertilizer when you sell the fish. Yeah. You know? So it's extremely sustainable. It's maybe also, you know, just you quickly refer to, I just want to, for clarity purposes, generally, and I assume there's probably another, I see Dutch buckets is coming into the area or more, if you look at YouTube and those, but generally, there's three main systems in aquaponics at the moment. It's your deep water culture, where your plants lay, basically they've got their roots in the water. Then there's NFT, or which most people just says pipes, where your NFT, if I'm correctly, it's for nutrient film technology.
Yeah, nutrient film or flow.
But then aggregate, which is basically the stones or the hydro balls or whatever medium you use. So it's maybe important that the listener understand that that's not used to aquaponics. It is, in other words, there's no ground involved.
True.
You don't use soil. And that might, for some people, be unnatural, but the benefit and why it is classified as organic is because there's absolutely no insecticides or pesticides or chemicals that can enter the system, because then your fish will die.
True.
So the fish is basically your nutrient provider and your quality control manager in the same breath. Rikkelies, all right. So I think, you know, for an urban farmer, why do you think an urban farmer should consider aquaponics? I mean, it's definitely not, I mean, we're not promoting that as the only answer, obviously, but why specifically do you think it's well worth investigating?
If you look at farming in urban areas, a lot of people have a small balcony pot or something, and there's one or two plants growing in that small area. Well, with aquaponics, you can produce a lot on a small scale. I will firstly start with that. You don't need a lot of surface area to plant your vegetables or herbs or whatever. The best thing is, purely because you don't use soil, you can use the NFT technique or the pipes, and you can put it up against the rail of your balcony. So you can put four or five, or maybe just three pipes on the rail, and you can circulate the water through there, and you can grow your vegetables in that pipes. So firstly, optimizing space. You use much less water. If you look at the traditional gardening, you have your garden, you have your vegetables or herbs, and you need to wet your garden. Now, the water just dissolves into the soil, and you never see it again, and in a few hours, the plants are just all welking again, and they need water again. So, with aquaponics, because the water is constantly circulating, you're reusing the same water over and over and over. And if you have fish in the water as well, the fish is also producing fertilizer for the plant. Whereas you use hydroponics, you would need to add all the additional fertilizers and stuff for the plants, which is also fine. The one will just rather be classified as more organic or with a lower carbon footprint or so. But again, you can optimize space, use less water. The warmer, the better. So the warmer it is, the better the plants will grow. So climate change, I can talk a lot about that and go into very depths about that, but I'm not going to do that all. So climate change has an effect, but it's controllable. If you have your soil, climate change has a definite effect. If it's not raining or if it's too warm, the plants just die. But with aquaponics, if you're doing it in small scale, even if you have a small greenhouse structure on your yard or so, you can manage the temperature a little bit and modify so that it's ideal for the plants. Further, you can, with the small space you have, you can generate another income. If you are only there to produce 5 salads a week for your household, it's still 5 salads you don't need to go and buy at a store. So it's an alternative way, an easy alternative way to get another income. And finally, I can say you definitely learn something else. It's not the normal thing that you can plant vegetables in soil, waiting in with water daily or so. It's something else to see the plants growing in a other type technique where water is constantly flowing with fish or additional chemicals, if I can say that.
In a hydroponic
system. So it's much different, but you still get a very, very good quality crop from the system. And in some stages, you can even get that crop qualified or classified as organic. So it's much easier. Also, you have a less pests on your plants, so it's much easier to control pests. Although, if you have fish, you can't use toxic stuff because it will go back to the fish. But yes, the advantages goes on and on and on. The only disadvantage I can mention is that aquaponics is a bit costly. If you need to put up a structure like the pipes or the aggregate, also for as traditional farming, it's quite just get a piece of land, put the seeds in, and it just grows. So that's the basically the only disadvantage. But for urban farming, it's not impossible. It's small enough, manageable. Managed time is about, it depends on how big the system is, but a half an hour, maybe a day, 10 minutes, just looking, making sure everything is still fine. So yes, the list just goes on and on and on of why urban farming and aquaponics can work so good together.
I remember I was training one of my farmers, and he was very skeptical about the aquaponics system. And he went to one of your courses, and he came back and he said, "You know what? There's no weeding involved." So, no, there's a number of benefits, and maybe just on in terms of like you say, you know, potentially superior crop that's developed. And I know you're playing a valuable role in the Aquaponics Association, and they've certified NFT as through the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and I think cancer as well. So it is extremely healthy crop that urban farmer can generate. Let's maybe just talk about the you know, the difficultness concept of people have often said to me, "Oh, but it's too complex." You know, you mentioned it's costly, and I know you're involved in a project that's the Flemish government sponsored or sponsoring, where you're rolling out aquaponic systems into Soweto, I think, is it?
Soweto is in Diepsloot specifically.
Diepsloot, okay.
And that's currently our first project that we're tackling, and then further on we will grow out or expand the systems into different areas as well. Yeah,
great. And what's your early learnings on those projects?
Well, firstly, it's the training aspect is a bit difficult. Urban farming, again, it's you can quite put it in different scales. Urban farming on your balcony, it's easy. You can learn it from YouTube. But if you're going into more specified producing food for a community or more than one household, there's small techniques coming in there that YouTube won't learn you. And in that case, this training is very important. Now, not all people in South Africa has the same level of education or training or so that makes the task even difficult, more difficult or so. So firstly, that was the first thing we've experienced by rolling out the systems. And also in communities like this, we struggle to get the new technique of farming. People need to buy into that technique. If people are not keen about using this technique, also it's quite hard to make it a success story. So firstly, again, urban farming is something quite new. People aren't very comfortable with it. definitely if you're an old traditional person with your small vegetable garden, for instance, my grandma won't be comfortable with urban farming. She will rather choose a soil and her 5 or 10 bean plants, and she will do that. So to get that mind shift for people that aquaponics or urban farming is the way to go in the near future, it's hard to get that mind shift done by them, by themselves, and that they buy into the idea. But again, training is important. Without knowledge and without training, the whole system can just collapse. Gain cost, but I'm not going to talk about that again.
Well, you know, and with your specific project, what's wonderful is because you got donor funding. I mean, the farmer doesn't pay for the outlay.
Nothing.
It's a magical benefit to be in. But yes, you know, and I agree with you, and I think also, you know, there's quite a big responsibility for that farmer that's now producing for the community. I had just a quick chat two weeks ago with Prof. Chris Willems from Belgium campus, and I know somebody have helped you, and you've also helped him, and he's quite instrumental in that aspect. And he mentioned also that, you know, training, but that there's a management function that one shouldn't disregard, you know. And I think on one of the previous episodes we basically came to the conclusion that, you know, it's about see one, do one, teach one.
Yeah, I think it goes hand in hand in training and that mind shift. If it's not managed, the system won't grow. You won't get new crops or seeds planted and plants harvested from your system. So it's again, people need to make the mind shift and take the initiative to manage your system. And to realize that this system doesn't need weeding, or doesn't need you to work with your hands in this muddy soil and bend over and get back pain or so. It's just standing up straight, working on this urban system or modular system. It's clean, no weeding, planting new seeds, harvesting the old. It takes not a lot of labor, if I can say that. But if you think of the tunnels where the system is placed in, that can be quite hard because it gets quite warm. But irrespective of that, the physical system doesn't need that much attention or that much management. So it's quite easy, straightforward. Feed the fish, harvest the plants, plant new seeds. That's that.
And interesting also, you know, just on the fish feeding, I remember when I started out as a hobbyist, and probably in many ways with regards to aquaponics, I still consider myself rather as a hobbyist. But, you know, you rush out and you buy yourself a fish feeder and, you know, set it, and, you know, there's and it's, you know, something one can do. But after, you know, Lindsay Termeseisen, you know, actually demonstrated it, that there's many factors that actually influence your feeding system. And I remember quite vividly, you know, he said the most important thing if you own an aquaponics system is don't delegate fish feeding.
Yeah.
That's too much. Obviously, you can't do it all the time. But fish generally don't, you know, they can go a couple of days without food, but that is where you really see the health of the fish, if they're not eating like they used to, or sometimes you need to feed them more.
That's,
you know,
true.
What is the sort of general technique when it comes to fish feeding? That
I would definitely say, I always put this parallel. If I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. My mother's never going to force me to eat more if I'm not hungry anymore. So we follow the same principle with the fish. We feed, throw a scoop or a hand or so, and stand back. If they're eating aggressively, jumping out of the water about eating, splatting everything, then you can give them another scoop or half scoop. If they're a little bit more relaxed, still some come up to the surface, take a few pallets or so, then you know, okay, I can rather come and feed in an hour a half scoop again, and they will eat all the pallets, rather than feeding another scoop then directly after that, and the food just drifts about on the surface, and you waste the food. So that's a principle we use, and well, sometimes we need to fish. Feed a tank about 11 times a day, purely because they eat much less at a specific time. But at the end of the day, they will eat the same amount as if you're feeding them 3 times a day with a lot of amount of food. So that's just a technique we use. Other people, other farmers use different techniques, and what works for you is perfectly fine.
I think it's just important for maybe somebody that's not that familiar with aquaculture is, especially if there is perhaps a sick fish in your system, those the feeding pellets, the food that's not being eaten, aggravates many times that fish condition. So, general rule is, Never feed when they've stopped, or don't continue feeding once they've stopped eating. Disregarding quantity. No, great stuff. But I must say, just it's a special feeling feeding your fish, and they go into that feeding frenzy, and then they look so happy, and as time goes by, it's funny how, you know, they start recognizing you.
As you approach the tank, they just realize we're getting food, and they get so excited.
If we talk a little bit about the fish, what is the general types of fish that's used in aquaponics?
Well, currently any freshwater species can be used, from ornamentals to fish to eat. Ornamentals like guppies, koi, guppies you're going to need a lot, but you can even use that. Goldfish, koi, you can use any freshwater fish. But currently people are more going into the way of getting edible fish, purely because they can sell that as an additional income or so. The top three that I can mention now is tilapia. Now tilapia is a lot of different species, like tilapia oricomus mosambicus or oricomus anoticus also. So either tilapia, it works perfectly fine. Trout is also getting its way into the industry, although South Africa is a bit warm. But in some areas, and so you can do trout, and it works very good. So trout is also a very good source to use. And catfish, well, it can be used, but for aquaponics, it's not so common. I've heard of a few cases where they use catfish with aquaponics, but it's not so, can I say, everybody doesn't use it. It's not that popular. That's basically the top three fish that I can mention.
Well, and I've eaten all three from aquaponic systems. I must say, you know, one of the things that when I was introduced to do it, and I asked, well, what fish do you use? And it took me a while to realize that, you know, your tilapia or your Macromus mosambicensis in Afrikaans is the blaukerper of the vleikerper, you know. It's a fish that I used to catch in the streams as a young boy. And I was just astonished. Yes, actually a local South African or African fish that's being acclaimed worldwide, internationally, as one of the best eating fishes on the freshwater. And I mean, let's agree, you know, sea fish is the first prize, you know. But there's not a lot of fish in the sea anymore. But freshwater fish, if I'm not mistaken, but I read a while back, after salmon, which some people will say is also a sea fish, but anyway, after salmon and trout, tilapia is the third most consumed fish worldwide. And we also had a bit of a chat with regards to, South Africans I always say South Africans is chicken eaters. We, if you go and look at the staple meat of the typical South African family, it tend to be chicken, you know.
Mm-mm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But if we look at north of our borders, north of the Zambezi, for example, up to the Sahara, the staple food is actually fish.
Mm, true.
Places like China, Korea, Vietnam, those are fish-eating nations.
Yeah.
And I often think that there's a lot of room in the South African culinary menu for fish.
Mm.
So I'm quite positive that I think tilapia is becoming more popular. I know in my business there's more and more restaurants that's offering it.
Mm-mm.
And you know what? It's half of the price of trout for the same weight. You know, so definitely something to consider. And yeah, I'm excited about the trout side of things because I know that the guys in Dalstrom and Machado Dorp and so on have been battling the last couple of years due to climate change, due to the increasing mm-hmm. temperatures. I don't know how they do it. I'm still battling very much to cool my greenhouses down in the summer months. But again, trout is just such a spectacular quality control fish, you know, because it needs very good, highly oxygenated water. Not true. Just maybe lastly on the on the catfish scenario, it's also interesting that you know the perception often is now that catfish tastes like mud. You know, I don't know exactly where it came from. Well, actually, reading up on it, well, what do you think is
well, definitely any fish that grows or lived in a normal dam river system or so, the water tastes. The water is a bit muddier, so the fish consumes that water, it goes through the gills, and obviously the meat is going to taste a bit more like mud.
Mm.
So that's where the perception is coming from, that those fish taste like mud.
Mm.
But if you're filming in an aquaculture system, and you don't even have any mud or soil or ground or anything in your system, the meat of the fish is just something else compared to what is naturally found in water systems also. So that's my opinion about that, what I think where the perception is coming from.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I must say I really think the catfish products that you sell in your shop is divine. I mean, those burgers is something else. It's really nice. If we maybe just talk a little bit around where do you think aquaponics per se is heading to in South Africa?
Aquaponics is a very big potential, and specifically in South Africa, it's the sky is the limit. We have a lot of land, so it's possible to farm very intensively with aquaponics. But the only thing that's quite holding us back is the perception of people in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't in that state yet that they want to take this mind shift and do this new technique. Again, I said South Africa has very vast stretches of land. That's why people rather choose to do traditional farming in a commercial scale rather than doing aquaponics, because why do aquaponics? We have the space. But aquaponics is just a way to save so much water and. So definitely there's a big potential, but people need to make the mind shift to work towards that, let's say, goal, to get it so green as possible, to reduce their carbon footprints and etc.
Well, I think maybe two comments that I'd like you just elaborate on is, on the way here, I mentioned to you the Cuban system where agriculture in Cuba failed dismally after at the end of the Cold War when Russia basically stopped their subsidies. And but fortunately, the Cubans didn't die of hunger, because what happened is micro farms closer to the city sprang up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that is one of the things that, like you say, yes, fortunately South Africa has got a lot of land, but we're in a very dry country.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, I mean, we've been able to survive many years with very little water if you compare us to North America or Europe or New Zealand or such a place that's got water abundance. So I think that's quite important, don't you think? The fact
definitely.
That it's a new type of farming.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And what water does, you know, how much water do you need? Is it a very water intensive aquaponic system?
Well, you need a lot of water once off, but after that you reuse the same water again and again and again. So it's not necessary that you use constantly a lot of water. It just depends on the heat and how much water is evaporating or so. So it's. I would say you save some water by reusing the same water, but you do need a lot of water or a specific amount of water once off.
Well, I think even calculated in that, what I've read up, you maybe can just verify this, is once your system is going, you lose less than 5%. Of your water to plant and evaporation. Is that a statistic?
I think it's possible, definitely.
And then even, you know, what I'm trying to calculate, or let's put it this way, very beginning phase research around this, is that even if you introduce your first mass use of water over a period of a year, you still use 20% less water.
Definitely.
Oh, sorry, 80% less water.
Oh, well, that's possible.
Yeah,
yes,
80%
definitely.
Less water. So that I think from that point of view, and then, you know, the other major cost driver in agriculture is energy.
Mm.
I mean, you need a lot of energy to drive your pumps, to drive, you know, water irrigation, to diesel in terms of going out to the fields, etc. With aquaponics, how's the energy utilization?
Well, definitely it's quite high, because you have all these pumps pumping water from the one side to another side. So it depends on the pump you're using.
Mm.
If you're using a high energy driven pump, your energy is going to be much more. But nowadays we're getting technology where the pumps is quite using much less energy. So it's, you can quite put it on a scale and see where it balances out. But it can be high if you're using high energy driven pumps. It can be low if you're using low energy driven pumps.
Well, I think it's compared to a traditional system of transporting water, let's say 300 meters through pipes, etc. Yeah, you circulating water, and I've just found that it's like you say. I mean, especially in the last 2 years, the energy consumptions on these pumps have just dropped amazingly. Also, the utilization of renewable energy, solar and wind. Have you seen? I know your hatchery, for example, is on solar. Is that? That to me is also a very important consideration, I think, if you start such a system. I mean, those pumps can run off one solar panel, for example.
It's very possible. It's just expensive.
Mm. Yeah,
the biggest disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to put everything on solar and on additional energy sources, but it's expensive to implement systems like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the solar debate is, fortunately, as I understand, solar cost is coming down. So, Rika Lees, I think I want to elaborate a little bit around the urban farming solution, because I mean you've designed together with your father a number of systems, but you've got a specific, I think, a patent on your Loppies system. How does that work? Talk us through the Loppies system a bit.
So the Loppies system is a trademark. Mm. So basically, it's a small modular aquaponic system. Whereas you have a 1,500 liters container where you put your fish in, so that would be basically the fish tank. And then you have three grow beds that's placed on top of this tank. The grow bed is filled with rocks, so it's an aggregate grow bed. And you have a pump pumping the water from the fish tank to the grow beds, constantly circulating through the grow beds back to the fish tank. And this is a purely aquaponic system by himself. A system like this can sustain a household between 4 to 6 people on a constant base. Now, the biggest thing of the system is it wasn't designed for food production. For food production, you need a commercial system. But this system is rather a sustainable system to sustain households producing vegetables and herbs and even fruit or whatever out of the system so that they can sustain themselves. And about 100 plants can be harvested per month, and every second week 2 fish can be harvested, so 1 fish per week. Now, if in a household, it can be a bit challenging. Again, the system is, that's what the system can produce, and without that, it's a bit out of balance. So the whole system is in balance, each one helping the other, and it doesn't need a high level of education. So you put the system down, you feed the fish every second day or once a day or how you ever decide, and you harvest your vegetables, plant new seeds or seedlings, and the system just sustain himself.
Great. Well, and what sort of square meters, how many square meters do you need?
The system consists out of 3x3 meters.
3x3.
So it's well, and it can fit in a garage.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And talking about fitting in the garage, I mean, you've done experiments with light.
Yeah, we also have light available that you can place inside, indoors.
Yeah.
Now there's a quite big spectrum of all the different lights for this area and this angle and so and so. But yeah, it's even possible to do it indoors. You don't. Yeah. That's also a big advantage of urban farming. It doesn't need to be outdoors. Yeah. It can be done indoors as well.
Yeah. Well, that's magnificent, and I think an important thing, and we want to elaborate a little bit more on that next week, is your control systems and so on. But you've through the it's the Belgium Campus University, they've developed an app, Fishify, that if I'm right, that helps you manage the system.
Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate a bit on Fishify?
So Fishify is basically a platform that's been created as a monitoring system. It is created to input or insert data into the system. If you have electronic measuring kits that you measure the ammonia and the temperature and the oxygen and etc. from your system, it can directly send all the info to the app, and the app will automatically draw graphs to determine what is the quality, how stable it is, and so. Basically, from that, you can also communicate with staff on the premises. Now, I'm speaking now from a commercial aspect. A harvest is also quite easy. You can insert, all right, today I need to harvest my spinach, and I need to plant new spinach, and you can see the grow curve of the plants, and so. And then further on with the harvest, it gives guidelines. For instance, if the pH is too high, it tells you, all right, it's too high, you need to do this and this and this and this. So it's a basic guideline, but also a basic source where you can gather data and store it for further research, or use it in a different way, or etc.
Great. Look, I think the value of that gathering that information is just absolutely superb. And this Fishify, it's on the iOS, Apple,
yeah,
all platforms and so on. And I think that's one of the benefits. If you do buy the Lapi system, you get access to that for free.
All right.
Yeah, no, good luck. I think that's magnificent. I use it. And again, I think it's the important thing, you know, as we touched on training, a habit is one of those things that tend to form after, I think Stephen Covey said, after 21 consecutive actions, a habit is formed, you know. And that's really, you know, if somebody's listening to this and is starting his first aquaponics system, get into that habit. That's really the thing that just makes all the difference, you know. Anything, you know, if things do go south with your system, plants don't grow, fish die, is there sort of a general quick diagnostic thing that you can advise people? Is it complex? How do people handle, or let's put it this way, why do you think sometimes systems don't work?
Purely because people don't have enough knowledge. I've seen that in cases where people jump into the system, we're going to become fish farmers, and they don't know nothing about the fish or anything. The research hasn't been done, and then it's quite we see that the system just fails and so. But further on, if there's a quick if a solution, I would first say look at the water temperature.
Water temperature
plays quite a big role in the fish as well as in the plants. So that was the first thing I would say. But then after that, knowledge and training, and have you done your homework well enough to know that you can do this in your sleep.
And I think that the important thing is, I mean, you're still a scholar, you're still a school-going person, you know, and you've actually, through technology and through good quality control and training systems and so on, have been able to be a fish farmer while at school. That's amazing. Is it, you know, I mean, something that the monitoring of that just second nature, or was it still very time consuming?
Sometimes it's a bit frustrating.
Okay, I can imagine.
But it became a habit.
Mm-hmm.
It's now part of a schedule. You need to do this. But also, I have staff that has been trained, so I leave it in their hands. If there's a problem, they will tell me about it, but maybe only in a week's time.
And they fixed it.
They will already fixed it, sorted out, everything. So that also helps. If you have trustworthy staff, it's easy, but sometimes it's a bit frustrating.
Well, I just think there's maybe a wonderful opportunity for somebody listening, yes, to maybe link the aquaponics system to a general business system and the lessons that one can learn and transpose or extrapolate from the one to the other, because that's really what you've done, is you've empowered your staff to take action, to take corrective action, and to keep populating your database so that you can have almost remote control. Rikilizma, that's wonderful, and I think next week we're gonna elaborate a little bit on agri-tech. You know, where this can go, because it's not a new technology. Aquaponics, it was used 5,000 years ago in China already, but but the way in which I think it's being used now in the urban environment and the leading role that you and your family is playing in that is, I think we need to stand still on that a little bit, because I really think it's a wonderful solution. You know, maybe if we can sort of wrap it up with a summary, What would you like to say as a summary?
Urban farming definitely has a great future in South Africa. People just need to think a bit different about it and be more open-minded. rather see the solutions that can come from that. Yeah, that's definitely a conclusion that I can make.
Yeah, no, wonderful, and thank you very much for the
great pleasure.
The leading role you're playing in that. And maybe from my side, just to conclude, you know, a lot of questions that, and one of the specific questions that we've got when we said on Facebook we're going to talk about aquaculture is it sustainable? Is it economically viable?
Well, it depends on how big your system is, what fish you're using, where it's situated, all those different aspects.
Mm.
But if you're looking at, if your homework has been done thoroughly and you've done all the processes, this fish, this amount of water, this is what my system is going to cost, then definitely yes.
Mm.
But if you haven't done that, then you might struggle.
Mm. Well, yeah, I think maybe 2 points. One is that if you what did you mention, five veggies and one fish per week out of a, you know, 3 square meter surface, you know, that's going to give you a return on investment of between 18 and 20, maybe 24 months, you know, just by virtue of not buying that at a store. So yeah, there's different ways probably to look at that return on investment. I'd like to summarize by, you know, sort of taking four elements. I think out of our discussion, what I've learned is you've got environmental control. You can actually put an aquaponics system in house, in a basement, in a garage, in whatever, on a balcony. Can use a wall. You know, there's a lot of methods that you can actually overcome the problem that we have in agriculture in South Africa, namely water. Because you're using the same water over and over, you're economically daring, and you can put it in a place where otherwise plants wouldn't have grown, you know. So I think that's a wonderful thing. The second sort of mind blow for me is this is probably the only model in agriculture where you make money out of your fertilizer. It's not a cost, it's actually a profit center. So your fish obviously being the fertilizer. That's one of the important things is understand what you're feeding the fish and make sure that the fish, when you sell them or utilize them, covers that cost.
Mm-mm.
There we go.
Yeah.
And then I think the energy consumption aspect that you can, you know, can optimize that. And lastly, just because you're getting superior yield per square meter and because there's no weeding and additional labor-intensive tasks, your labor costs or its time that you utilize is significantly lower.
True,
so.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of ways in which you should look at it, but I think one of the factors that urban farmers should not forget is that it's a very economical model from a time consumption point of view, aquaponics. Rikkelies, next week we're going to delve a little bit more into some of the scientific research you've done, and we're going to look a little bit more on some of the learnings and advice that you'd like to give urban farmers. But at this stage, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you very much for listening. If you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, click the link on Facebook where you can review us and tell us what content you'd like. We aim to bring you the very best in content. Thank you very much. This is Chris Late signing out. Until next time, keep farming.